Coming to you in hypersonic ultra maximum high definition from the depths of the interwebs and straight into your ear holes. It's the Cinema Geekly Podcast. Featuring all of the people's names I wasn't paid enough to say in this intro.
Podcast episode 179, brought to you by the good people of Adam Tickets, cinemageekly.com/Adam Tickets, or click the Adam Tickets link at the top of the page to pick yourself up some movie tickets or a gift card for the movie fan in your life. It is Anthony Lewis and Glenn Beauvais talking all the movie news that is fit to print. Actually, we're not really talking all the movie news that's fit to print. We're talking about all the movie news that is interesting to us at this moment. And then, of course, we're going to talk about some movies we've seen. And Glenn, what a way to start by this news from a few weeks ago. I don't know if it's technically news. It might still be a rumor, but it was from USA Today. Vince Gilligan is thinking of making a movie about Breaking Bad. AMC... is this going to be like a movie, or is this going to be like a movie for AMC?
I would assume a movie.
It says Vince,
I can't imagine it requiring a huge budget, you know.
It says Vince Gilligan is writing and directing a two-hour Breaking Bad spinoff that is about to get underway. A person familiar with the production, but not authorized to speak publicly about it, confirms to USA Today. Filming will begin shooting in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is obviously where they film all of this stuff. In mid-November is when it is scheduled, so they're presumably underway now, if it's happening at all. And to extend through early February, this is according to the Albuquerque Journal, who broke the news of the project.
Guess I gotta go visit Albuquerque and see if I can look at stuff.
According to the Journal, it is unclear whether this will be released theatrically or sold to a TV network. So, obviously we're on board for this, so that part of the talk is, that's done. Of course we're on board for this, but what do you think it is?
I don't know.
Like, it's not going to be a Walt White thing, he's dead. Is this going to be like a Jesse?
Maybe it's a Jesse, you know, it's a Jesse or a... But I feel like you could also do Jesse and Better Call Saul, you know, like they're mm-hmm. both alive. I don't know, maybe a side character like a Nacho or like I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just curious as to whether or not
or they go in a completely different direction. Mm-hmm. And it's like about Anna Gunn's character and Junior, you know, Walt Junior.
Perhaps. I'm just really curious. Like to me, I think you could maybe sell a movie theatrically if it's got, like, the Walter White character in it. But if this is going to be something that takes place afterwards, like, I don't know if the Jesse Pinkman character is enough for, like, theaters and, like, that feels like something that AMC would air. To say nothing of its quality, I'm just saying from a marketability standpoint.
Yeah, or like, you know, they said shopping around. It's probably one of those, like, we make it, we know someone's going to buy it, probably Netflix. You know, that might be what they're banking yeah. on.
I don't really know.
Maybe it's about Gail.
maybe it's about Saul. I mean, I'd be okay with that.
I would, like, do it like an X-Files thing. Well, it's funny, I say that, and he wrote for X-Files.
He did indeed. So, I don't know. I guess we're in.
It's nothing but, like, the black and white aftermath scenes.
Yes. I'm blindly in on this anyway, because it's Vince Gilligan, and it's Breaking Bad, and everything he's done with that property has been solid gold. So... yeah, we're going to watch it, but I can't for the life of me think about what it could be about. I have no idea at all. But who knows? Maybe it's about... Doesn't he have, like, a young daughter, Walt?
Yeah, I mean, he's got the baby girl. Well, that's what I was saying. It's like, maybe it could be about...
Her...
You know, the aftermath of, yeah. You know, with the... I mean, not just that, but, like...
Having
an infamous... You know, they were, like, in a halfway house. You know, I mean, it wasn't like...
Yes.
His family didn't have severe consequences. I mean, yes. He can complain about how broke they were beforehand and the house they lived, but I mean, like, he destroyed their lives.
That could be interesting. I'd watch that. Okay, so Disney Plus, Glenn.
Which makes sense, because he is a huge fan of... Skyler.
Skyler,
like,
yep.
Vince Gilligan always, like, he seems to make an effort to get people to be like, she's not the bad guy. Remember this.
All right, let's talk about Disney Plus. This thing... I mean, they're going after Netflix really hard with this.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
It's obvious. We already know about the proposed MCU-related mini-series, I think. I don't think they're going to be long-running... I don't think they're planned to be long-running shows, but it sounds like a mini-series surrounding some MCU characters. I think the latest we heard was Winter Soldier and... God, who was it? Was it, like, Bucky and Falcon, I think? Or something?
Makes sense.
I could have swore I heard something about that.
But they're dead. How can they do that?
And, of course...
Is it a prequel?
No, Glenn. This is just, it's a spoiler for the next Avengers movie. Of course, they've also announced Jon Favreau's The Mandalorian television show that's going to be on there. And there's another Star Wars show coming to Disney Plus, purportedly this one starring Diego Luna, reprising his role as Cassian Andor from Rogue One, which I think some people balked at, but I actually kind of think it's a good idea. One of the criticisms of Rogue One was that some people thought that they didn't get enough of a sense of who these characters were to feel anything for them in Rogue One when they all died off, spoiler alert. And I don't know, I kind of like the whole seedier side, the dirty fighting resistance stuff, as opposed to the nice, clean Jedi politics stuff.
Yeah, it turned into like a spy show.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Rogue One, and I feel like this could be really interesting if it's... They're exploring these elements of Star Wars that never really get explored outside of, say, the animated shows, where they kind of go into them a little bit, but they don't really get hour-long, seasons to do this. Yeah. A lot of the times,
something like that would be seem like that would be serialized better.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know
versus Cowboy Bebop, but it's Star Wars.
Yeah. I know they're like coming at us with a lot of stuff. But, I mean, you know why they're doing this. They're doing this when they open the gates of this Disney Plus thing. They want everybody who subscribed to Netflix to cancel Netflix.
They don't want it to be CBS All Access.
They do not want it to be CBS All Access. I mean, they've got the toys. They've got the tools. And it seems like they're putting them all out there. I know people are worried about there being too much. And I worry about that, too. Just the other day, I was... thinking about just how much stuff I'm watching and keeping up with. It just so happens that at the moment, I'm really happy. I feel like it's an embarrassment of riches. But at some point, I feel like there could be too much. But for the most part, with the way streaming works, I've been able to time manage things. In the olden days, I would say that I had far more valleys where it felt like there was nothing to watch. And now, with a bunch of things coming out from literally every corner, it feels like there can be too much to watch if you feel like you have to watch it all right when it happens. But if you space it out, right now I'm at a point where I'm always going to have something to watch for a very long time. And I'm not going to have these valleys. It's just that you've got to push past this point of feeling like you need to watch it immediately as it happens. So I don't know if this is one of those shows that I would jump onto. It being a prequel to a prequel. You know, I'm probably not going to dive into it straight away, but it'll probably be on the list to check out at some point once I've watched all the other things I'm watching. Let me see here. What else do we got? Actually, no, there's a couple of trailers that I want to talk about, but did you see this tweet that's been making its way around from Guillermo del Toro? Like, a lot of people have retweeted this thing.
What is it?
So, it's a thing about screenplays that he's developed. I don't know what prompted this, but I'm gonna read you the thread here. It's this is just from the 26th, so I think yesterday, as we record this, 2 days ago. So he tweets here: screenplays I have developed, fully written or co-written, that have gone unproduced so far. And he lists them here: The Witches, Justice League Dark. He apparently wrote A Beauty and the Beast. At the Mountains of Madness, Fantastic Voyage, The Count of Monte Cristo, Mephisto's Bridge, Pacific Rim 2, in parentheses he writes, very different, I'm guessing from the release that came out. He writes here, Secret Project Untitled. I don't know why he bothered to list that, since he's like, I have a secret untitled project.
That sounds promising.
Superstitious, Nightmare Alley, Haunted Mansion, a pilot for a Hulk TV show, The Buried Giant, The Coffin, Drood, List of Seven, and he's like in a few others. He writes here, the thing is, each script takes about a year or so. So more than a decade of work lost. In the case of Mountains, much more, since we scouted and designed for that. Oh, and Wind in the Willows, he wrote for. He wrote a thing for, which I loved, in parentheses. To be clear, these screenplays are written, done. Each of them took months or years of my life. Meetings, synopsis, beat sheets, all were written. Features 90 to 130 pages each. These are not maybes or wish list items. These are done. I was kindly reminded of The Champions, based on the TV series which I developed for Crew/Wagner about a decade ago. By the way, an entire cup of coffee fell into my keyboard the day of the presentation. It fried. I had to do it all over. Always a backup. Chris McQuarrie did a few drafts, too. I don't know what prompted this, but Guillermo del Toro decided to put out here that he has fully written a lot of screenplays. Some of these for very large titles that are completed that have gone unproduced. I don't know why he did this, but do you think this is like his, like maybe as a writer, his way of getting this stuff out here, that maybe like an Amazon or a Netflix might go, oh, okay. Like a Guillermo del Toro Count of Monte Cristo. That could be fascinating. And the script is already done. You know, that sort of thing. Do you think that's what he's doing here? Like, it's just really weird that he listed off all of these things.
Maybe he needs the cash.
He's going, running low on money over at Casa del Toro.
Guess.
It just seems... Do any of those sound... I mean, you know del Toro's style. Do any of those things sound like something you'd want to watch?
I don't know. I don't see the opportunity for fish fucking in any of them, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's a forte of his.
He mastered it, apparently. I mean, like, the Justice League Dark, like, that's the obvious one. Like, I would say Beauty and the Beast might be interesting, but again, like... No one's gonna want to actually watch something that's... true to the source material that he'll probably want to go.
And they just did a Beauty and the Beast film anyway, but
Well, I mean, it wouldn't have to be, it's public domain. It wouldn't have to be Disney property or anything.
I love The Count of Monte Cristo. That's a favorite story of mine.
Yeah.
I even like the Jim Caviezel version from, like, whatever it was, 2001? Whatever it is. I even like that version.
Yeah. Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce, that's right. Yeah, I love The Count of Monte Cristo. I'd be interested to see, a GDT Monte Cristo film, so... But that's just because I feel like, you know, that's a good movie for reinterpretation or retelling. But
yeah, I mean, it's a story that you can tell over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, I wanted to mention it here because it just felt weird. He's like, hey, internets, here's a bunch of screenplays that, I mean, obviously, I'm sure that part of it is he mentioned that there's like a decade of work there that a lot of those screenplays can take like a year to complete, and they just got left on the shelf, never made.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, like, a lot of screenwriters being like, and? Like, mm-hmm. that's the job, like, that's the gig.
Yeah.
You know, not...
Maybe it's because he's got the... Hire. I mean, I kind of wish I could have seen...
I remember the Hulk TV show thing. I thought that was, like, a done deal, and then they just halted it, like, right at the 11th hour.
I wish I could have seen his Pacific Rim 2 as well. Like, I saw the actual Pacific Rim 2, and it was okay, but it was not the big, dumb, fun spectacle of the first. They tried, but it didn't quite work.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I guess they're interesting, but I like his style. Like, he does, it definitely has a unique style.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't like him as a writer.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I didn't care for The Shape of Water. I did not care for it at all.
A lot of people that fish sex movie, though.
Yeah, they did. I'm criticized that I just don't appreciate its sincerity, which, you know, whatever, that's fine. I guess I'm post-Martin. I don't know. And then, like, what was that Haunted House movie he made that everyone was all jazzed for, and then, like, it came out, and, like, I never heard anyone talk about, like, Crimson Peak or something?
Yeah.
So it seems like, you know, maybe his writing movies have been turned, like his scripts have been turned down for a reason. Like, he's visually, you know, a great,
really good
director and that kind of stuff.
I like the Hellboy movies.
Yeah, but I don't know, like, I don't know if he necessarily wrote them.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say he may have quote unquote wrote them, mm-hmm. but with so many of these, like, big budget stuff,
yeah, they see a lot of passes. A lot of the scripts.
You know, you don't know how much someone really did a punch up for it. So, I mean, it's not.
Okay.
I would say that if there's another name attached to that movie, as far as who wrote it, I would say they probably had more to do with it.
We got a couple of trailers to talk about.
Oh, he wrote those Hobbit movies too, and they were.
Yeah, well, he did, but then they kind of went and changed a lot of stuff as well. But anyway. We got a couple of trailers to talk about, Glenn, and the order of the day is cute and cuddly animal things. Detective Pikachu. There are a lot of people who really hate the idea, I guess, of what this movie is. And then there are people who have no interest at all in Pokemon, like me, and I think it looks kind of adorable. So, I don't know, where do you fall in this?
And then there are people who are my age, and we're against our better judgment. It's like, fuck it, I get to see live-action Pokemon. It seemed like the resounding answer around people my age. I mean, essentially, the people who grew up with Pokemon. Facebook thing I made about how it's just our Transformers.
Yeah.
First movie. I'm sure you were super jazzed. You get to see Optimus Prime on a big... For me, it's... I got to see a Charizard breathe fire in a fighting ring. Hell yeah. At that point, that's a win.
Well, I mean, I'm more jazzed about seeing this new Bumblebee movie because it has the Optimus Prime I grew up with in it. So, not this weird Michael Bay monstrosity that he created, but that first movie was the best of the bunch and was fun for the most part. But, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that for purposes of marketability and drawing a wider, more general audience, they gave Pikachu a talking voice That of Deadpool?
Well, Detective Pikachu, the video game, he does talk.
Ah. So is it, do you think it's just that it's Ryan Reynolds and everybody just hears Deadpool that is throwing them off?
Yeah, well, I mean, the internet wanted it to be Danny DeVito. That was that's who we all wanted.
Yeah, because his voice is that of the opposite of the look of Pikachu.
Yeah. Whereas, yeah, now all you hear is Deadpool, so it's just kind of like too soon.
I mean, I'm sure it'll probably make for some great jokes in the next Deadpool movie.
But... Yeah, like, I don't think he's necessarily bad as Pikachu. Like, I thought his line delivery was good. It just, it seems like, oh, we're just making Pikachu and a Deadpool. Oh, okay.
Yeah. The story here seemingly is, what is it, a boy loses his father? Disappears?
Yes. A kid loses, I mean... In the video game, he's a much smaller, younger kid.
Of course, yes.
You know, like how Ash is like 12, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, this kid's more like 17, yeah, something like that.
Nah, probably like 20.
Oh, you think so? Oh, maybe.
I mean, he's getting a job. I would assume he's like in college or getting out of college.
Yeah. His father's missing, and Pikachu, who is a detective, for some reason. Is going to help him, but only he can hear him talk. And he sounds like Ryan Reynolds. Everybody else hears Pika-Pee and Pikachu and the things that he normally says.
Which is just his name.
Yeah.
Apparently. There's only one Pokemon can talk.
Yeah.
Well, there's like three, but Meowth was like the only one, and there was one specific Meowth that could speak English.
They're all basically Japanese. They're all basically Groot. They can only say their name, essentially.
I can't believe Pokemon didn't sue the crap out of Disney on that one. Or yeah, I'll say Disney.
That was their thing. Well, I don't know if it was their thing first or not, but
no, it wasn't. Groot far exceeds Pokemon.
And you know, they go on an adventure and they meet and run into other Pokemons. So. That appears to be it. I think it looks like it could be fun as somebody who's completely uninitiated into Pokemon. What about you? As a person who grew up with this stuff, has played the games and everything, how does this sit with you? Is it as you said, that you're just going to look past some of this stuff because it's Pokemon in real life?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be good. I don't have any expectations for it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you're just, I get to see Jigglypuff sing, and because she's singing, someone fell asleep. Like, it's going to be stuff like that. It's going to be all Easter eggs, side stuff. Like, that's all I'm going to care about when I watch this movie.
Yeah.
If it ends up being a fun, decent tale, whatever, coming of age thing, whatever, that works too, but...
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, the other trailer, this kind of really deserves air quotes, but the live action remake of The Lion King, it's not really a live action remake.
I mean, they showed you more than Aladdin.
They gave us a teaser with a lot more. I'm just saying in terms of all of the animals look real, but they're computer generated, so they're not really real life.
Tell me they should have Milo and Otis this movie.
Yes, they should have gotten real animals and then digitized their mouths. That's
throw them off cliffs, just like they did Milo and Otis, sure. Where they killed like 18 cats.
Is that a true story?
They killed the cats that like I'm sure everyone remembers the classic movie Milo and Otis about a pug and a
I presume
yellow
this
cat.
Is. I'm sure this is. I presume this is before the time where they had people on.
I mean, this is like in that movie, like from the '60s or '70s
or
something.
I think so. Yeah.
But yeah, like that part where the cat falls off the cliff and jumps into the water or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they killed like 10 cats just doing that.
Oh my god. Yeah. Well, times have changed.
And then Homeward Bound, they went bigger and harder and threw a mountain lion off a waterfall.
Jesus. Well, I'm glad all the animals are CGI in this film. So, is the talk I think the talk around this is that it is going to be different than the animated movie in some regards.
Is it? Because
that is what I heard, but it feels like in the trailer for this, they're going for the giant needle of nostalgia, like right off the bat. Because they just do the, you know, everything the sun touches or whatever, you know. They did all that bit with Simba being raised up on the cliff and everything, and the music. It all looks spectacular. And I know in this household, I am not the animated Disney fan, but everybody else in this house is, like, a big one. I like the movies, but I'm not a diehard over them. And the nostalgia worked on three quarters of the room. So, I don't know. I have heard that. I'm presuming that this, like all of these Disney movies, is based off of a book first.
And it's based off of Hamlet.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, wasn't there? I could have swore there was like a novelization version of this particular story, not Hamlet, which is this is derived from. But
there is a anime that is very, very similar to Hamlet and the Lion King that came out in the 80s.
So yeah, I don't know why, but for some reason I read that there were going to be differences, but
there's not as many songs. I mean, not that there's there's like, what, three actual dance numbers in the, like, Scar, you know, and all the hyenas do the Nazi stuff, and then
yeah, they probably aren't going to do that.
Yeah, probably not going to do that. And then, they'll probably do Hakuna Matata to the same effect of...
Oh, sure, yep.
Of, like, how they did the Bare Necessities in Jungle Book. Because it's, like, the one that actually fits to the story. Like, I was actually talking to my friend about Aladdin. Like, are they going to have... You know, the music I really like in Aladdin a lot more than Lion King, but we were talking about Lion King, you probably don't need it as much because it's not as integral to the story.
I'm sure you'd get, like, Circle of Life or...
Yeah, I mean, like, but that's not, like, you'll do that, but it's not, like, I mean, like, the movie doesn't rely necessarily on, like, the music driving the story besides, right. You know, like, all Scar's got to say is, like, I mean, he doesn't need the dance number for us to be like, oh, yeah, he's going to kill his brother. Yeah. we don't need Simba to sing a song about how the day he's going to be king. Like, he talks about it enough for, we don't need that necessarily.
Yeah. But he just can't wait.
But Todd is like the only one, because it makes sense. You know, why would you cut that out? It's fun.
Yeah. It's, you know, yeah.
It's just going to be weird that Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner are the ones going to be singing it.
I mean, what else are Timon and Pumbaa going to do if not that song? So
yeah,
that's like their thing.
They're just going to quote In the Heat of the Night, which was like the thing I always thought was funny as a kid. Why I watched The Heat of the Night as a kid is probably parenting choices, but...
So are you in for the...
Yeah, I mean, sure, why not? I mean, I thought Jungle Book was fine. Like, I thought people loved about Jungle Book was like the Avatar thing. Like, it just looked good.
Yeah.
Whereas I thought the movie was like, it was fine. Like, it was good. And Jungle Book's fine, whatever.
Beauty and the Beast, you were a fan of, I believe.
I was a fan of, but that is complete, like...
And you
have to take me aside from that. Like, my judgment of that is completely shaded.
Yeah. You're too close. Wasn't there a Snow White as well?
No, there was a Cinderella.
Cinderella, that's what I was thinking of.
That was a decent one. Mm-hmm. And they only had the one song at the beginning. I've talked about this with a friend the other day about... Oh, their live action, their lack of songs. Because you're talking about like how Dumbo, like, oh, you don't really need music in that. I mean, you'll probably have the song where they'll have the overtones of, you know, like whenever his mom says goodbye, and then whenever the weird trippy animation part that's going to be in the movie, obviously, because why would Tim Burton do it if he wasn't going to get to do that part?
Yeah.
But the reason why I was bringing it up was, you know, with Lion King, that's like Hakuna Matata is like the only one I could see, like, if you're gonna not have the music in it as much, that's the only one that would be necessary. And the other parts where they're singing, it's not necessarily the characters singing it directly, like In the Air Tonight, or not In the Air Tonight. It's, well, essentially that, but the Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Mm-hmm. Like, they're not singing it, you know, with their mouths moving. It's just Elton John, and I can't remember the female singer, but they're just singing it over them.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's not like, you could probably play the music and do all that.
Cast is
Aladdin,
excellent.
They better not get rid of the music, because
that was
the music
key.
Is integral.
Yep.
Like, why would you have Will Smith be the genie if he's not going to do the two big dance numbers in the movie? Like, whenever you first meet him and he talks about himself, or whenever Aladdin goes into town, like, why wouldn't you do those? They're fun. They also will kind of work for the bombasticness of the characters. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's, before we close out the show, let's talk about the movies we've watched recently since the last podcast. Glenn, you've seen two. I've seen, like, four. So let me get my two older ones out of the way real quick. And I believe these are both movies that you've talked about in the past. Star is Born, which actually I don't remember if you... Yeah, I think you did review it on the podcast. I like this movie, but I did not love it. Like, there's a lot of people who really love it. I don't
well,
think
then
I'd
you're just going to go to hell, and you have no soul. So
I guess? I don't know. I watched this 2018 A Star is Born, and A Star is Born, Glenn, in Alley. Lady Gaga's
Alley.
Oh,
I was going to say Andrew Dice Clay, but yeah.
He was surprisingly good.
He was good.
But
him
anyway,
and Sam Elliott, I thought, were the best.
I didn't even... Sam Elliott was also fucking tremendous in this movie, but... and I didn't even recognize it was Andrew Dice Clay at first.
No, me either.
He just looked like a schlubby dad from New Jersey. But,
I mean,
I know, yeah.
That's probably what he would look like these days.
Yeah, yes. I just... it felt like Allie was supposed to be the star of the movie. But by the end of the movie, it did not feel like this movie was about her at all. It felt like it was about Bradley Cooper's character, because it felt like everything sort of just rebounded to him. I don't know. It just felt like she was sort of just along for the ride. It was also one of those cases of, like, just I didn't get their relationship. Like, it just didn't feel like an earned relationship to me. It felt like she maybe fell in love with him because he basically thrust her into his spotlight, and it was being whisked away into, you know, from the doldrums of her, you know, lower middle class lifestyle into becoming super famous, and she, you know, that's what she became enamored with. Like, the relationship never felt like people who were together for, it felt like puppy love or something, maybe.
Or bear with me.
Go ahead.
You've seen Toy Story, right?
I have seen Toy Story, yes. All of
you
the
know
Toy
how
Stories.
The, yeah, you know how the Martians are, like, eternally grateful?
Yes.
To Woody and Buzz, and then Mr. Yes. Potato and Mrs. Potato adopt him?
Yes.
Maybe it's something like that.
Perhaps, but to me that's not a...
I think it's just they also have sex with the Martians.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a particularly healthy relationship, it feels like.
No, I mean, I think that was the thing, is that they weren't in a healthy relationship.
No, but she never seems to really realize that. And at the end, I mean, like, the end is, you know, kind of all about him at the end, really.
Well, because he is a star that becomes born after death again.
Yeah.
Like, whenever Sam Elliott's talking about, I mean, spoilers, it came out a month ago. I really don't give a shit. At this point, you're either going to see it or not.
Yes. I mean, it does.
Yeah, like when Sam Elliott tells the story, like he starts, you know, all those people singing it in bars and stuff like that. It's like,
yeah.
Yes.
I mean, so there was, and it does what a lot of the other versions of A Star is Born has done, talking about the allure of fame and its pitfalls and its highs.
And the guy dies.
Yeah. I mean, well, I mean, you know, and it talks about, like, the power you get and what happens if you can't control the power, that sort of thing. But, boy, I don't know. It's just something felt really icky about their relationship. Like, it really feels like this is something she should have come out from underneath and then come out on top of, but at the end it always felt like she was still underneath it all. But she didn't hate it. She liked it. I don't know. There was something sort of weirdly just kind of ew about it for me. I don't know. I think I would have much preferred it if she...
I think the problem is that you don't see enough of their, like, everyday happy stuff. You just see the big blow-ups.
Yeah. You see all the extremes.
And I was trying to do the math of my friends, and we were assuming they've probably been together about 4 years during the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that seemed like a solid number.
Right. I mean, they're otherwise, like, electric together, like, as a chemistry and a presence. Yeah, and
they sing well together.
The music is great. There's a lot of stuff to like. I gave it 3.75. I liked it a lot, but I think there's plenty of other people who would have given it much, much higher. Some of that stuff didn't play well for me, but I still liked it. I just wasn't in love with it. First Man I watched, I did love that.
Yeah.
That was excellent. I read some interesting negative reviews about it. Some weird negative reviews that were,
about flags?
No, actually had nothing to do with flags. It was kind of like on the reverse. It was like the reverse of the conservative criticisms. This was like, all the shit that's going on during the...
Oh, it just glosses over the struggles
outside of the story, right? And it's like all of Neil Armstrong's compatriots and friends are all like white people. And it's like there's no commenting on the turmoil. Everything seems so calm and stuff. But I would argue, based off of what I know of Neil Armstrong, who was an incredibly humble and secretive... I don't know if secretive is the right word, but...
Private.
He was very private, and he's... Like, at times when you watch this, he almost seems unlikable because he's so focused on his work and his job that at times
he represents that.
Yeah, at times he comes off like almost like a robot, like emotionless,
kind of
like
aloof.
Yeah, like how could anybody love this man? But it's just because it's focusing on who he is. He was pretty much the guy they show in that movie. Like, you know, what were Neil Armstrong's thoughts on the civil rights movement? Nobody really knows. You'd be guessing because he didn't grant a lot of interviews. I was listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson's podcast, Star Talk, when First Man premiered. And he's like, I had the privilege to interview Neil Armstrong, and because I know he's notoriously private and doesn't like to give interviews, I asked him 2 questions. And he was super polite and gave Neil deGrasse Tyson answers. Not dismissively or anything like that. He was very nice and polite, but, you know, he doesn't like to do interviews. People don't know that much about him. The movie is gorgeous. A lot of stuff was meticulously recreated in many moments, and stuff were almost procedural in how it was presented, and at times that worked against it a little bit, but for the most part, it's stunning to look at. You were right when you told me they did not spend a lot of time on the moon, but my goodness, for the time that they spend on it, like...
Dude. I mean, it like...
It might be worth going to see it just for the moon stuff.
Yeah, just the 10 minutes that you're there. I mean, and it's, you know, again, like the ill-informed criticisms of stupid flag stuff.
Yeah, that's absolutely ridiculous. And some of the other stuff, like, you know, I want some more down and dirty, there's some of that that's going to come in one of the other movies I talk about as well, but... This is just not, you know, as far as I can tell, this was a pretty accurate portrayal of Neil Armstrong.
Yeah.
And that's kind of all you can really ask for. He's not a charismatic man, but this is a story of a person who is going to be, I think as it was quoted at one point, he's going to be in history books for as long as history is written about.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's going to be one of the most famous people.
Yeah, explorers, whatever.
Of all time. Yeah. I mean, just person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't tell you...
Worthy of having a film. Other, yep.
I can't tell you almost any other astronaut's name. But by God, like, Buzz mm-hmm. Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, I know those.
Yep.
I mean, Jim Lovell, but that's...
Jim Lovell.
But, no, I mean, it's you... It's... The movie wasn't about going to space. It was
I mean,
about this man and essentially his focus to finish a job and the grief that came along the way with that job.
Yeah. I mean, they had like Deke Slayton in this, in First Man as well. And the first thing I thought of was that's Flight Surgeon Horseshit Deke from Apollo 13. Because that line has stuck with me forever. So, like, as soon as I saw him.
I wish he was in it more, because I love Kyle Chandler. That was my one thing, is I hated that there wasn't enough of... Like, I mean, like, Jason Clark's White was in there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, up until the accident. But I really was hoping more for... Because, again, like, I love Kyle Chandler, so I was hoping he was going to be in it more. And his scenes are great. Like, whatever they talk about, we're going to go to the moon. And he just makes that line across all the fucking chalkboard.
Yes.
I gave it
4.5. I thought this was excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, so what have you seen, Glenn?
I saw The Old Man and the Gun.
Yeah, so tell me about this. This is on my must-watch list.
With Robert Redford,
mm-hmm.
Casey Affleck, Danny Glover, mm-hmm. Tom Waits, and Sissy Spacek.
Yep.
And it was adorable. It was like a grandpa and grandma movie. Like, I would have seen this with my grandma and grandpa, and... they would have loved it,
mm-hmm.
and I also loved it. Like, it's from the guy who did Peach Dragon.
Ah, okay.
And A Ghost Story.
All right.
Which I still haven't seen and wanted to see. I mean, I've seen Peach Dragon.
Yep.
Which I think you saw, right? Didn't you see Peach Dragon?
Oh, man.
The remake?
Maybe? That came out, a couple years ago?
Yeah.
I may have seen it, but I don't recall.
The only reason why I bring it up is because the movie's... it's just as that, like, it's just kind of, it's charming, it's adorable, it doesn't do anything, like, drastic or crazy,
mm-hmm.
But it's just a fun movie about a guy who, he just loves robbing banks. He's good at it, he likes it, and they do say, and I didn't know this at the time, but they do say in the movie that mostly what happens in the movie is true.
Yeah.
And even that, like, needs to... enormous amounts of air quotes after looking up the guy's life story, because almost everything in the movie is made up to a certain extent.
Yes.
Except for the fact that this one old man robbed a bunch of banks, mm-hmm. with two other older guys. You just don't really necessarily, you don't necessarily know who the other two were.
Yeah.
And that he had broken out of jail 14 times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, and the ways that he broke out of jail or how he broke out of jail. Yep. So, besides that, like, everything else in the movie is completely made up. But then, like, him and Sissy Spacek, like, I'm watching the movie, like, it first happened the first... because the whole thing is he meets her after after a heist. Because
mm-hmm.
her truck's broken down the side of the road, and he helps her. And he's got a hearing aid in, and then cops drive by.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out that hearing aid is a police scanner. He modified, which he did in real life. He really modified a hearing aid as a police scanner.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And him and Sissy Spacek just, you know, every once in a while they get dinner together and talk, and he kind of tells her what he really did, and she didn't believe him, thought he was joking.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then Casey Affleck is the cop that's chasing him down, and...
It's like a flip-flop version of Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's kind of like that, you know, where he kind of taunts him.
Yeah.
Again, all of this other stuff is made up, but it makes for a good movie. And that's my thing, is like, don't, if you're going to this for accuracy, I'm sorry. Like,
yeah.
Same thing as First Man. If you're going to First Man to be like, well, he didn't drop a bracelet into a crater on the moon. Like, yes, we also don't know that he didn't. That's called creative licensing. Like,
Yes.
But again, this is what the movie's about. It's mm-hmm. the imagery. It's not, it doesn't have to be completely accurate. It's about the motion behind it.
Yes.
Because he did take stuff to the moon, and they don't know everything that he took.
Yeah, he was by himself at times for
yeah, he
for
was minutes. By himself for 10 minutes.
Yep, and...
no one knows what he did.
He claims that he lost the bracelet, which everybody says is not a Neil Armstrong thing. He's not the kind of guy who loses things or loses track of things. He's incredibly meticulous. So what would you give Old Man and the Gun?
I'd give it like a 4.5. I mean, wow. I will say I've seen a lot of movies I've enjoyed a lot lately. It was mm-hmm. it's a charming little movie. It's fun. When they do a bit where they kind of do a montage, but it's like a montage of all the things that how he's broken out of jail.
Yes.
So like they kind of gets his rap sheet towards the end of the movie, the cop does, and he just like, oh, this is how he broke out the first time. And then they just go through. But what was funny, I couldn't think of what movie it was, but all they do is show a clip of an old Robert Redford movie.
Yeah.
Him like crossing a river, and it's young Robert Redford, and it's like, whoa, and it kind of like takes you out because it's like grainy film, like what it would have looked like back
tremendous
then. Yeah, but no, I feel really cheated that I never got to see Sissy Spacek and Robert Redford play love interests in a movie, because they were phenomenal together. They were so cute, and again, I'd say it because they're old people, but mm-hmm. it's just they were adorable. Their little banter back and forth, and just like it really was like you watch it and
yeah,
it's like, man, have I really appreciated Sissy Spacek over the years? Have I appreciated someone like Robert Redford? But the best part of the whole movie is a story that Tom Waits tells.
Yeah,
and I will try and stop myself from not trying to impersonate Tom Waits because he just has such the unique gravelly voice like Nick Nolte. The thing is, you come in like halfway through him telling the story, and he's like, oh, you know, when I was a kid and I woke up in the middle of the night one time, and then dad was making a ruckus, go down, and my dad's in his tidy whities and his shirt, and he's got his gun pointed at me, and anyways, that's just why I don't like Christmas. So that's like
long story short.
Yeah, it just feels like
I'm excited. Oh,
that's probably just a story Tom Waits actually has. Like, that's probably just a story Tom Waits tells in real life.
What's the other piece of cinema you witnessed?
Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Ralph Breaks the Interwebs.
Ralph Breaks the Internets.
So, you can confirm or deny, but from what I gathered, the movie was much better than the trailer signified.
Yes.
Is what I've heard. Okay, so tell me about it.
I liked it as a movie better than the first one.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, and I love the first one.
Yeah, me too.
There's no real bad guy, which was cool in a Disney movie.
Yeah.
So... you know, there's no big King Candy or nothing. I mean, it's just, you know, people sometimes do bad things when they're hurt to people that they love. I mean, that's really what the movie was about, and letting people go, and how the internet has the capability of being this wonderful utopia and has the power to do such great good in the world.
Also does horrible, yeah.
But unfortunately, it does awful, horrible things.
I heard somebody suggest that sooner than later, Disney is going to want to do a Disney Princesses Avengers-like team-up film. A lot of people said that they really worked in that movie.
Yes, they did. The way that they used them was tremendous.
Would you be on board for that? Like, how could they not do that?
You see that in the trailer, right?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, that scene goes on way longer and has one of the most, has the funniest gag that I was not expecting at all. And it works because of movie rights to them buying Fox, which is how they did it. As I realized when I was looking through the credits, again, stay for the credits for the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, they've got a mid scene and then a post credit scene. So.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, both were enjoyable. One's a bit on the nose and kind of a dated joke, but it worked. But no, it was just good. The voice acting's great. It's so weird. You know how the Sausage Party movie came out and Alan Menken wrote a Disney-style song for that movie?
Yes.
He did a much better version of that with Sarah Silverman in this movie.
Oh, okay,
where
cool.
Where she writes about Slaughter Race being her home.
Okay. So what would you give this this Wreck-It Ralph sequel, Glenn?
I mean, I feel like I sound like a broken record, but... 4.5
Okay.
Maybe 4.75 I really liked it. It was... it's visually really pretty.
Yep.
And what was cool, especially... You bring up the princesses, is the fact that... You know, even in their own movies, they all have their unique looks, their unique styles.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, I thought they did a good job, especially on the older ones.
Yeah.
Rendering some of that hand animation to CGI. Like, I thought Belle looked really good. I mean, Moana looked the same, like, obviously.
Yep.
Tiana looked really good as far as, like, because she was, like, the last hand-drawn princess.
Yeah. Princess and the Frog, right?
Yes. Yeah. And, like, Pocahontas is pretty... The only one that was a little weird was Jasmine. That was the only one where it's kind of like, okay, this doesn't quite work.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, all the other ones are... I mean, Snow White, but it's just, like, she looks so weird in the old movie to begin with. Like, that's, like, the only one that throws me off.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, they did a fun joke with Meredith from Brave. So, like, all the Disney princesses, they all kind of have... And it's all the original besides the ones that would be dead. It's all the princesses, you know, returning for the voices. So it's all their voices for it, which was cool.
Yep.
But, yeah, so Merida... it's not Meredith.
I think it's like Merida. Yeah.
Merida? Okay. So, like, when she talks, it's, like, the heaviest, thickest Scottish accent. And you can't understand a word she says. And I can't remember which one it was, but kind of, like, leans over. It's like, ah, she's from a different studio. So, like, it was a funny bit. And
that's
that was,
really cute.
Yeah. So that scene that you see goes on much longer. And, again, has my favorite gag of the whole movie because it just it came out of nowhere and I about died.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's a good movie. It's got an even better message than the first one, which I thought the first one had a pretty good message in it.
Yeah.
But no, it was cute. It was really pretty. And just, you know, some of the funny gags work really well. It's what I like about the movie is this movie is definitely about, Vanellope von Sweets. She's, I would say, more so the lead in this movie than Ralph.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
That's good.
All right, my last two movies. So earlier, Glenn, you talked about, God, what was it, Cinderella? Or was it... I can't remember if you said it was Cinderella or if it was Beauty and the Beast, the one that you were too close to objectively...
Oh, it's Beauty and the Beast. I cannot objectively ever, yeah.
So speaking of such things, I watched Bohemian Rhapsody, which I will note... way too close to the subject matter on this to review with any sense of objectivity. I have loved Queen since I was a small child, because my parents listened to it, and it's just something I've grown up with. They're, like, in my top three favorite bands of all time, and I think Freddie Mercury is the greatest frontman ever. So, my brain knows that this was a relatively standard biopic. And my brain also knows that there's some stuff, because of the band's involvement in this, that there are some things that were glossed over. Although not as much as I thought. Because I thought there were some rumors going about that, like, they weren't going to talk about Freddie Mercury's...
sexuality.
His sexuality or his AIDS or anything like that. And that's not true. Those things are actually not super prevalent, but they're definitely there in the movie. They are things that occur and are talked about. They're just not focused on heavily. It's It's really fairly standard, but what made it work so good is Rami Malek. At first, it's like this dude is wearing a wig and fake teeth. And by the time the movie is over, though, because he doesn't do a lot of the actual singing in this movie, he, to compensate for that, he really ends up having to embody Freddy as a stage performer more. Like, by the end of the movie, he just... It worked by the end of the film. And that, combined with, obviously, all of the great music, and what I thought was actually, at times, a really, really good story. I love this thing. And I cannot... you don't want to trust my review if you're not a gigantic fan of Queen, or even if you are.
I'm not going to see it, so...
Yeah, I'm just... What, because you're not a fan, or...
I will say, like, having to listen to 2 hours worth of something about Queen sounds like the seventh circle of hell for me. Me, personally. It's not that I hate Queen.
Right.
A little bit of Queen goes a long way for me.
Ah, yeah, not for me at all. It's like the reverse for me. A lot of Queen goes a long
also,
way.
Also, I take
me.
Umbrage that you didn't say Chad Kroeger was the best front man of all time. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Despite knowing the flaws that this movie has, it did not prevent me from giving it 4.75. I did not give it 5 because I was self-aware enough to recognize that that would be a step too far. But I loved it a lot. I also watched The Grinch, I watched the original Grinch on television the other day as well, but I'm talking about the 2018 Illumination animated Grinch film. And Glenn, I don't know where you stand on this 2000 Jim Carrey's Grinch film. Do you have a stand? I know there's some people who insist that that's the Grinch movie, but it's not for me.
No, it's the old animated thing.
Yeah, and this movie...
I don't think I hate the Jim Carrey one. I think I'm just there.
I dislike it. I thought the first time I watched it way back in 2000, I'm like, oh, that's okay. But and since like watching it back, I've grown to not like it. I don't think it's very good. But and this movie, of course, does not replace... I mean, I grew up for roughly 30 years watching that original Grinch cartoon every Christmas time. So this does not replace that for me either, nor is it as good as that one is. But that's because that original one is based off of the Dr. Seuss book, and it's only 22 minutes because the book itself is not particularly long. And I think Dr. Seuss himself corroborated on that animated movie. So when you've got the person behind the book also working on it, you know, it's I don't know, it's one of those things that really works. So, yes.
No, I mean, it's a shame that he didn't get his Japanese propaganda into it.
So, yes.
Oh, have you ever read some of his, like, transcripts and stuff, for, like, interviews?
I have not.
Woof! Oh, man.
Okay, well, some reading material, perhaps.
Yeah, he's not a fan of the Japanese. He is, woof, man. He, World War II did,
did a number on people's feelings
sure
about
did.
Asian culture, I suppose.
So,
there's going to be plenty of very valid arguments about this movie that, it's a... You know, the original Grinch story is 22 minutes, and that story is told perfectly fine within those 22 minutes, so anything else is just going to be padded for time, and thus makes the movie terrible. I am not going to argue with you that this movie inserts things to pad time. They did it in the Jim Carrey movie. They did it way less in this movie. I don't know how long the Jim Carrey movie ran for, but this one comes in at like an hour and 17 minutes, if you're excluding... the logos at the beginning and the credits at the end. I think that probably pads the runtime a bit more. But as far as, like, actual movie goes, it's, like, a little bit over an hour. So they don't add that much to it. They do add some stuff to pad things. They introduce a couple of new characters. They extend out, you know, things that you wouldn't have seen in the cartoon, like the Grinch scouting the homes in Whoville and stuff to figure out his plan, and him gathering the things that he needs to... I mean, they do that in the cartoon, but it's much more shortened. And obviously they spend a lot more time with the Grinch as a character, a la the Jim Carrey movie, than they ever do in the original cartoon. So yeah, some of that stuff is padded out. Some of it works, though. Like, it's not necessary to the story, but it's there, so it might as well be entertaining. And most of it is. Some of it is not. But most of it is entertaining. For me, the thing that really worked the best is essentially telling the... Because they don't really delve too much into the Grinch character in the cartoon. Because back then, who cares about the character? He was bad, but then something changed his mind and he became good. This one, there's a little more motivation behind it. It really, as weird as it sounds, deals with, like, the Grinch's loneliness. Like, that's where all of his hatred comes from. Some of that plays into, like, stuff that we saw in the Jim Carrey movie, but I think done better here. You know, like, Grinch was little, he was in an orphanage, but nobody wanted him, and Christmas time came around, there were no decorations for him, and he saw family celebrating, and he was by himself, and he grew to hate Christmas. Although he doesn't hate Christmas, what he hates is his loneliness. Benedict Cumberbatch is pretty good. I mean, he does a Dr. House voice, but he's good. All the animal stuff is cute and adorable and funny. There's a couple of things that didn't need to be in this movie, but were for runtime padding. But largely, this is really good. And it's Illumination. If you've seen any of those movies, they're beautiful looking. They borrow a little bit visually from the Jim Carrey movie, but they borrow a lot visually from the original cartoon. And it just looks gorgeous. It's really pretty looking. Ultimately, this is, like, not going to replace yours and my, like, our Grinch Glenn. It will not replace this. But this will probably be, you know, as the Jim Carrey one was, this is going to be, like, the definitive Grinch for a bunch of young kids. And it's a good movie with a good message. You know, it's not, like, the best of these things I've ever seen as far as, like, the animated movie that's for kids, that's also for grown-ups. In fact, I would say this is really more kid-oriented than it has appeal for grown-ups, but there is some there for grown-ups. I gave it 3.5. It's pretty good.
I wonder why they felt the need for him to do an American accent.
I don't know. I mean, I think they wanted him to try to approximate something akin to how he sounded in the original cartoon, but I don't know. Benedict Cumberbatch has
But I don't think of the Grinch as, like, sounding super... he obviously isn't, like, British, but...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I hear you.
He has a unique voice, and I think that's why I like it so much, is I love his voice in it. Mm-hmm. Just so... He's just such a jerk.
Yes, and he is a jerk in this film as well, but... I think they do a good job. It's not tremendous, but it's definitely good enough for, like, you know, holiday family film, for sure. And it's beautiful to look at. I would say it is worth a watch. But I don't know if it'll become a family tradition around here or not on the holidays, but overall pretty good. Okay, so that's...
It's not Christmas Vacation.
It is definitely not Christmas Vacation, which we have already watched once in this house, so... God, it's tremendous. It gets better every time I watch it.
I know. It's so funny.
It's so great. Okay, so that's a wrap on this week's show. Head on over to cinemageekly.com to check out the archives of the show. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn. Just search for Cinema Geekly and hit subscribe. Glenn and I will be back sometime either right near the end of the year, I presume, or sometime near the beginning of the year. We've maybe one even before then. I'm not sure, but we definitely have our best ofs and worst of list to compile. Unlike in years previous, I've actually been keeping a tally. Since I've watched so many goddamn movies this year, I actually have a tally of all of the movies that I have watched and the scores I have given them. Because otherwise I would not be able to remember everything. Especially with all these Netflix original movies that have all... that we've been watching that have all been taking place in 2018. So, yeah, I don't think I'm going to have a problem putting my top 10 together, but my bottom 5 might be a little tough. I haven't seen a lot of terrible movies. I've only seen a couple.
I can't really think of, I mean, we all know what our number 1's going to be, but...
I haven't seen anything worse than Fallen Kingdom, but... You never know, everybody. There still might be some room in there.
I guess there's a couple.
Well, we're going to go ruminate on that. For Glenn Beauvais, I'm Anthony Lewis, and we'll catch you again soon with another Cinema Geekly podcast.